Revelation chapter 3, please. Revelation chapter 3. Good to see you all tonight. Trust you've had a good day. And that God will bless you tonight through what you've just heard, as well as through what you will hear now. Revelation chapter 3. Just going to read two verses. Verse 15. This is Christ speaking. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm, and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. I don't suppose you've ever heard those verses read in a gospel meeting. I'll tell you what I want to do tonight. Every time I hear someone give their story of how they got saved, I want to do the same. So I'm going to tell you the most wonderful story in the world. At least it is to me, because it's my story. It's my experience. I can remember stating on one occasion, it's a wonderful thing to give your testimony, but it's even more wonderful to have a testimony to give. I remember hearing the story of a group of people after a gospel meeting in Eastern Canada. A group of them met in someone's home, and I guess they had some light refreshments, and they sat round in a circle. And they decided that they were going to each one take turns to tell how God saved them. So they started going round the circle. And they came to a young woman, I guess probably a teenager. And she said, I was very young when I got saved, so I don't remember it. You'll have to ask my mother. Everything went quiet. I would wonder whether she really had a story at all. It is so important to have a story to tell of salvation. Now, those verses seemed quite irrelevant, I know, but you'll see their relevance as far as my personal life is concerned. My father moved from Wales to Canada in 1925, at the age of 18. I guess he's just like the prodigal son. Left home and went into the far country. For the first couple of years, he worked on farms in the Fraser Valley. And then he joined the Canadian Navy in 1927. And he was in the Canadian Navy for 20 years. So that's from 1927 to 1947. My mother, on the other hand, she moved with her family to Canada when she was young. I think she was about 13. So that would take it back to 1922. And my mother and her family lived on Vancouver Island, in a little place called Union Bay. Anyway, I don't know at what time she moved from there. Well, maybe she hadn't moved from there, I'm not sure. But sometime before the war, probably about 1933-34, my father's ship pulled in at Port Alberni. And that was the occasion in which my father and my mother met for the first time. 9 months later, not having met in between, they got married. And so they were married for a number of years. Anyway, my dad, being in the Canadian Navy, was away actually far more than he was at home. In fact, I wasn't born, of course, until late 1938. I do not recall having a mother and a father living in the same house during all my life. During my childhood, I lived with my mother. I can remember a couple of occasions in which my father visited, but that's all I can remember. And then after the war, of course, my parents divorced, and my dad was given custody. And so from then on, at least from the time we moved to Wales, we lived with my dad. And I never saw my mother for over 26 years. So my father was, as I say, in the Canadian Navy, and during the war, he was based in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And he traveled on ships, convoys, between Halifax and northern Russia. And so during the whole of the war, my father was hardly ever home. I can remember the one occasion we were living in Nanaimo, and I can remember my father visiting us in Nanaimo once. My mother was a very needy person. And because my father wasn't around, she sought to have her need met elsewhere. And I can remember I must have been 3 going on 4 when my mother decided that we were going to move from Nanaimo to Montreal. I can remember traveling on the train. I can't remember being on the ferry, but I can remember being on the train going to Montreal. She was following after a soldier. I'm not sure if he's the one that she eventually married, but she was following after a soldier. And so we moved to Montreal. And I can remember there came a point in time where I guess it was somewhat inconvenient to have us children around. So we were shipped off into a children's home. I don't know how long we lived there. You know what it's like when you're a child? Time just seems to go on forever. I can remember the one year in my life that seemed to be longer than any other year was 1946. It just seemed to go on and on forever because I was just a child. So it's very difficult to know exactly how long we were living in each place. But anyway, for a while, we lived in this children's home. And I can remember my dad coming in his Navy uniform to the children's home. I don't know how he found out where my mother was living, but he came, and when he found out that we 3 children, Maureen and Norma and myself, were in this children's home, he came to the children's home and he took us out. And then we went and lived with my mother again. Then I was still 4. When we moved back to Nanaimo. And I can remember the journey. I can remember stopping at a particular station, which I conjectured was probably Winnipeg. And I can recall when we were stopped at this station, my mother getting off the train and walking down this road. It was right opposite where we were sitting in our carriage. And I can remember seeing my mother walking down this straight stretch of road and disappearing inside a store. And while she was in the store, the train began to move. And I thought we were leaving without my mother. And of course, I began to cry. I didn't know that the train was just changing tracks. But we moved back to Nanaimo. And we lived on Rose Hill in Nanaimo. Before I had left on the first occasion, I can remember planting a peach stone. And when we came back, I went back to where I had planted that peach stone. And I thought I was going to see a fir tree. Don't ask me why I thought it would be a fir tree, but I thought that there would be a fir tree, but there was nothing. I hadn't taken it out of its kernel, of course, and so it never grew. But I had very vivid memories in my childhood. I can only remember once in those years being inside what you would call a church. It would have been in Montreal. I don't know if it was a cathedral, but to a little child, it seemed awful big. I don't know why we were there. It wasn't a church service. Maybe we're just there to see it. That was my first experience of being inside a church building. So you can tell that I was not brought up to hear the gospel. I think my mother was. My mother's parents were Scottish Presbyterians, and they left Scotland because of the deteriorating conditions in the British Isles at that time. So whether they were actually believers or not, I don't know. But they certainly had a fear of God. And my mother was brought up in those conditions, but it never rubbed off onto her. Now, she didn't live a terribly wicked life. I don't want you to get that impression. She had that one problem, but she was not a really wicked person. Only in the sense that we're all wicked, of course, in the sight of God. Anyway, I got to the point where I was about to start school. I can remember starting school in Nanaimo. And I can remember one occasion I got chicken pox. And I had to stay home. And I can remember being outside this place that we lived in, and I was trying to cut this piece of wood, and I hit my head with a hatchet. Fortunately, it was the blunt end and not the sharp end. But these are some of the things that I can remember as a child. There was one occasion when my mother's future husband came to visit us. Of course, my dad wasn't there. He was in the Navy. And I can remember just outside our house, there was a little area of bushes. And I had wormed my way inside these bushes, and I opened it up, and I used to play inside there. And I can remember Roy calling me for a meal. I totally ignored him. He was not my dad. I could never accept him as my dad. Anyway, the war came to an end, and so did my parents' marriage. By agreement, my father was given custody of all three children. My mother's future husband, Roy Monroe, he was a farmer in civilian life, but he was in the military at this time. He didn't want the children. Well, apparently he would have had me. I guess he wanted someone to work on the farm, but he wouldn't have the girls. And so it was all or nothing. So my dad was given custody. This is 1946, I suppose. And so all three children were shipped off to different families. They were all on my mother's side of the family because my dad didn't have any relatives in Canada. Maureen was sent to an aunt and uncle in Nanaimo. Norma and I were both shipped off to different aunts and uncles in Union Bay. And I lived with Uncle Wilf and Auntie Ethel on Vancouver Island. Sometimes when I'm on the island, if I'm going up north on the island, I'll go along the old highway. It took me along the coast, and I would go right past the house where I lived with them. I couldn't say how long I lived with them. I used to think it was about 2 years, but probably it was quite a bit less than that. But those were the happiest days of my childhood, because it was a stable home. I had two cousins, Margaret. She was much older than me. She was already a teacher in the school. And Patricia. Trisha was just a year and a half older than I was. And she and I were actually quite close. And I had other cousins living in Union Bay as well. Most of them males, and we used to play together. But that was the most stable part of my childhood, living with that aunt and uncle. I didn't know until we actually came back that my aunt and uncle had sought to adopt me, but my dad wouldn't let them. They just had the two girls, and both of those girls died of pancreatic cancer when they were still quite young. Both married, but both quite young, so they were left with nobody. Anyway, the time came. My dad came out of the Navy in 1947, and I guess in the early summer, maybe late spring, the three of us were put on the train, Maureen in Nanaimo and Norm and I in Union Bay, and we went down to Victoria. And we lived for that period of time with a couple that were friends of my dad's. Well, the man had been in the Navy with my dad. He had been a tailor in the Canadian Navy. So my dad knew him well, and we lived with them in Esquimalt. I can still remember to this day the address, 742 Lamson Street, Esquimalt. They were very kind to us, but eventually my dad came out of the Navy, and then we all got on board the train again, traveled right across Canada, down through Boston, down to New York, stayed overnight in New York, and then the next day we got on the Queen Mary, and we went over to the British Isles. I can remember my first impressions of the Rhondda Valley. When we arrived, it was dark, very dark at night. And in those days, they still had gas lamps in the town. And they weren't very bright. So it looked to me, as a child, that this was a very dark place. I never fell in love with it. I love to visit there now. I don't go there very often. But as a child, I never wanted to be there. All the houses were stuck together. They were all row houses. And most of the houses didn't have any lawns at the front. They had tiny backyards. And if you wanted to play with a ball, you had to kick it around in the street. Most of the time, I would play with a tin can in the street. Anyway, I was 9 years of age. Just nine. I was nine in October, and we moved over to Britain at the end of November, and we arrived on December the 3rd, 1947. We lived, to start with my grandparents, on my father's side, obviously. They had a business. It was a tobacconist business, and newspapers, and glossy magazines, and all that sort of stuff. And what was going to happen was that eventually my father was going to take over the business. So for a little while, I'm not quite sure how long, they continued the business, I suppose to get my dad used to running the business, and then eventually they retired. Well, my grandparents were both religious people. I don't say they were saved people, but they were religious people. And they sent me to Sunday school. My grandfather went to a Welsh Baptist church. My grandmother, she went to a different church. I don't know what denomination it was, but the place was called Bethlehem. And I was sent to Sunday school. Probably my sisters too were sent to this Sunday school. But everything was in Welsh. And we didn't understand a word. One thing I forgot to tell you. While I lived with my aunt and uncle in Union Bay, my aunt sent me to a Sunday school. That was my first experience of ever being in a Sunday school. It was a United Church of Canada, so I doubt very much whether I ever heard the gospel. But one thing stuck in my mind. We had little books that covered the curriculum of what we were going to be covering probably for that year. And at the top of each chapter there would be a picture that gave some idea of the theme of that particular chapter. And I can only remember one. And at the top of the page it showed a country scene. And in the middle of the sky there was a huge eye. I don't know whether this was the theme, but what it told me was this, that God sees everything. And that was a concept that never left me. And because of that, there were things that other boys did that I couldn't do. I didn't smoke. I didn't swear. I didn't gamble. I didn't drink. Well, I can remember having 3 cigarettes in my life. Maureen, my oldest sister, she persuaded me to have a cigarette when I was 15, and it made me sick. The next time I had cigarettes was one Christmas day in Cyprus in the army. And I had them in the Naffy canteen just to show I had nothing against it. But really, it never appealed to me. My dad was a very heavy smoker and a heavy drinker. But anyway, I had one alcoholic drink. It was a small tot of rhubarb wine. My dad's aunt, who was a Catholic, she just pestered me until I took it, but I didn't want it. I despised alcohol. You see, I saw the effects of that in my dad's life. As a teenager, I would wait until my dad came home from the pub. And then I would have to try and make sure he got off to bed, and then make sure he didn't have a cigarette in his hand when he went to bed. And so it never appealed to me. That was the only alcoholic drink I ever had. Then, I gambled once. My dad's bank manager was in our home. And he just pestered me until I played cards with him. And I won 3 pennies. We used to call it threepence in Britain. I won 3 pennies off him. And I felt so guilty, I gave it back to him. I can remember as a teenager, all on my own, trying to make myself swear. And I couldn't do it. Because I knew God heard everything. Now don't get the idea that I was a saint, because I most certainly wasn't. But there were things I could not do. Some of them I wanted to do, like swear, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Anyway, so that was my total experience of Sunday school, was that little spell in Union Bay, and then when my grandmother sent us to Sunday school in Treorchy in South Wales. I guess after a year and a half, they retired and they moved to a place outside Cardiff called Rumney. When they moved away, that was the end of Sunday school for me. Well, the only time I would go to Sunday school after that was the week before the Sunday school outing, just so I could go on the outing. But other than that, I never attended Sunday school. Now, I did have some knowledge of the Bible because of what we learned in school. But we certainly never heard the gospel. But I did have some idea of the history of the Lord Jesus and so on. Okay? Anyway, I passed the 11 plus examination when I was 11, and I went to the grammar school. That's an academic school. I don't know why I went there, because I certainly didn't work at it. I don't think I ever missed a day of school, but I just as well have, because I just did not work. My dad never asked if I had done my homework. I don't think ever once did he ask if I had done my homework. And so most often I used to do it when I got to school the next morning, just before we had to hand it in. And I guess I cheated. I got some of the information from others. So I was not a good student in school. I became thoroughly bored. And so at 15, I got permission from my dad to leave school. I left school at 15. Fortunately, the school I had gone to was a grammar school, so it was academic. So at least it taught me how to study, even though I didn't study. So I left school, and for 2 years I worked in my dad's store. Well, that was the biggest bore in all the world. To sit there waiting for people to come in and then attend to them, to me that was so boring. So at 17 and a half, I joined the British Army. And the place that I went to join the army was where they were recruiting for the REME, that's the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. So I went and I had to do an IQ test, and as a result of the IQ test, I could have gone into any trade in the REME. So I thought, well, it'd be nice to be able to work on cars, so I decided to become a mechanic. I had never ever removed a spark plug. I don't know if I even knew what a spark plug looked like. But anyway, I went on this 16-week wonder course, as I called it, and I was actually doing very well. I was one of the top two students in the whole class as we were going through the theory. But then I saw an engine, and we had to work on this engine, and my marks went right down. I nearly gave up the whole course. Anyway, I finished the course, and then they shipped me off to Cyprus. And there in Cyprus, I was shipped off again to Famagusta and to a camp called Karaulis Camp. That was a very interesting place, because 10 years before that, it was an internment camp. That's where they used to put the Jews that were trying to illegally get into Palestine. If they were caught, they were put into that camp. I suppose there were others as well, not just the one, but that was one of the internment camps that they used to put them in. Anyway, that's where I was. I did not like the army. The army and I did not go well together at all. The only redeeming feature about the army was where our camp was situated. We were right by the sea, and we had our own beach. It was a rocky beach, but you could dive off the rocks into the water, and I spent every free moment during the summer in the water. I just loved it in the water. Anyway, that's beside the point. I was attached to what they call the 45th Regiment Royal Artillery. They had the big guns. And I was in a particular battery. They were divided up into batteries. Don't ask me why the word battery, but each separate segment was called a battery. And I was attached to a particular one. And it was decided, way up the line, that this particular battery was going to go over to Libya. And they were going to be there for 6 weeks, and there were certain things that they had to do. And it was decided that I would go to be their mechanic. But we all had to do special training. So we were shipped off to a camp called Bogaz. It was a nice area, and it was pretty primitive, actually. The only place where there was electricity was in the center of the camp, like a little canteen area. In our tents, we had to sleep in tents, we had these little gas lanterns. But anyway, while I was there, I met this man who was obviously a Christian. And he sought to encourage me to go to the MMG canteen. The MMG is the Mission to Mediterranean Garrisons. They had canteens in various Army and Air Force bases, British, of course, all around the Mediterranean, and even down as far as Kenya at that time. And in these canteens, you could go there during the course of the day or in the evening, and you could sit around, read magazines, and you could buy knickknacks to eat, and so on. Every morning, by the way, during the course of the week, when it came to morning break, someone would be arranged to go around all of us mechanics and find out who wanted what. And then they would go down to the canteen and they would order these buns that we could have. And I almost always had cheese buns and egg buns every morning. But I really didn't have much to do with the canteen other than that. But you see, on a Sunday, they were closed. But they had a gospel service on the Sunday. So anyway, this young man encouraged me to go to the MMG on a Sunday. Well, I had to go to Libya. In the meanwhile, I was over there for 6 weeks. But when I came back, I decided I would go Sunday afternoon. And for the first time, I heard the gospel. I cannot remember ever rebelling against the gospel. But it took a while for it to really sink in. I had been going there for a while when this little Irish soldier came. And so he was attending on a Sunday too. On a Monday night, in a little trailer next to the canteen, they used to have a Bible study. And I had never been to this Bible study. I just went Sunday afternoon because I liked the food. But anyway, one Monday evening I was going to the canteen probably to get something to eat, and I happened to look in the window of this little trailer, and here was this little Irishman sitting in the Bible study. So I felt convicted. He hadn't been in the camp anywhere near as long as I had, and he was already going to the Bible study. So I thought, well, maybe I should go. So the following week, I started going to the Bible study. They were going through John's Gospel. And little by little, the truth of the Gospel got through to me. Then one Monday night, for the first time in Cyprus, I was put on guard. I was only ever on guard twice, I think, and all the while I was in Cyprus. This was the first time. And I can remember in one of the rest periods reading the passage we would have been reading in John's Gospel, wherever it was. I can't remember what chapter it was. And then I went out for my final 2 hours. And during that 2 hours, the early hours of a Tuesday morning, I got down on my knees and I trusted Christ as my Savior. And you know, everything changed from that moment. Life had meaning now. Life had purpose now. Life had hope now. Up until then, my life was hopeless. No, I didn't do the things that other people did, but I was miserable. I had nothing. I had no real close friends. I had nothing. That's the problem of having religious inclinations, but not having Christ. And so there, the early hours of that Tuesday morning, I trusted Christ as my Savior. And a joy came into my heart that has never left. A joy that this world cannot give. And a joy that this world cannot take away. I could go on for the next hour talking about experiences I've had with God ever since that day. I've told some of you, I know, about one occasion when I was coming away from the canteen, and I guess I was really feeling very happy, and it had been raining, and I saw a puddle in front of me, and I thought, I wonder if I can do it. So I decided I was going to try and walk on water. Well, I got my feet wet, but it really didn't matter. I knew everything was good now. I knew I had hope. I had something to live for. I had someone to live for. And He's brought so much joy and so much blessing into my life. That was 60 years ago in September. I have never had a single moment to regret the choice that I made that day. He changed my destiny. But He also changed me. Now the things I had interest in were altogether different from what I was interested in before. He can do the same for you. I know I've gone well over time. I'm sorry for that. But I hope God will bless you through His Word.